invading Africa actually represents, and this is going to get me in trouble, but it was, if you look at how forward it brought the African colonies, it ended up being a net positive. Now, this is, of course, people, it's going to get me in trouble because people somehow think that Africans were living happily ever after and things were great, and then the horrible English, British descended upon and murdered everybody, and the French suddenly murdered everybody, and that just isn't the truth. Obviously, the African nations had slavery, just like the European nations had slavery.
Professor Kayende Andrews, if you could respond.
Well, unfortunately, some people like to make money from being the black face of white racism, and Candace Owens has a very good history of this. I mean, that is a perfectly nonsensical view of the past. Actually, when Britain came into, when Europe in general, and Britain in particular, came into Africa to enslave people, Europe was behind, was far behind. In the 15th century, Europe was probably the only place in the world in a dark age and came into Africa. And one of the ways, and the main way that Europe takes over is the slave trade. It is draining out Africans to get the commodities, gold, silver, tobacco, et cetera, that then enriches Europe so that Europe can colonize. I mean, colonization in Africa is actually for a reason. Most countries on the African continent were not directly colonized by European powers for more than 100 years, because it took centuries of draining out African people, a barbaric system of slavery which never existed on the African continent, which totally not only destabilized Africa so that Europe could take over. The idea that slavery and colonialism somehow positive for Africa is frankly insane. I mean, just look at global inequality. The poorest part of the world is the place, is the so-called sub-Saharan Africa. The place with the lowest life expectancy is so-called sub-Saharan Africa. Anybody with their eyes open looking at this honestly could not possibly think that Africa has benefited from anything that Europe has done.
As we wrap up this show, we have 30 seconds. Kayende Andrews, what would you like to see now? I mean, you have the song God Save the Queen is now changing to God Save the King, with now King Charles III. Your thoughts?
I think it is time now to end the anachronism of what is the British monarchy. It's 70 years, certainly, I think. And when we say the Commonwealth, that's just the former British Empire. Let's not. I think many countries are going to think about removing the Queen as head of state, including my own country, Jamaica. But I think also in Britain, like this monarchy is a terrible symbol. If we want to have an anti-racist Britain, if we want to learn the lessons from the Black Lives Matter summer, if you want a public space which includes the millions of children of empire in it, you have to get rid of the monarchy.
Kayende Andrews, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of Black Studies in the School of Social Sciences at Birmingham City University. He's the author of The New Age of Empire, How Racism and Colonialism Still Rule the World. We'll link to your piece in Politico, I Don't Mourn the Queen. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Governance and Policy Committee meets quarterly on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
Good morning. It took me a second to begin the program because I was looking for my glasses, which were right in front of me, but because I didn't have my glasses on, I couldn't see. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Celeste.
Oh, gosh. I have been there so many times without realizing, well, you can see well, so you might have your glasses on.
Right.
God bless us. But what about all of us who think we can see and don't have our glasses on and still miss the big picture? Hey. That sounds like what we just heard in the last episode of Democracy Now.
Yeah, I was so amazed, you know, because of, you know, for a number of reasons, you know, the endless coverage of the death of a sovereign head of state. And I'm reminded because my family is from Barbados, and Barbados last year removed the Queen as head of state. And as we just heard, the talk about the empire and the legacy of it is challenging. And, you know, we have this sort of, we, meaning humanity, has this sort of romantic idealism of fantasy, of trying to create a world that never was. And, you know, related to our topic this morning, you know, this weekend I saw a movie which was, you know, something good, but it was The Woman King, with Viola Davis, which is a different take on a possibly imagined world that may not have existed as it was portrayed on the screen. But apparently people are very upset over movies and ways in which fictional characters are being portrayed. Is that true, Celeste?
Well, I hate to say that, but let's take this a little further. It's all about this concern with lack of loss of predominance or preeminence. And for clarification's sake, it would be helpful if, when I say white culture, you understand, I mean the supremacist attitudes of white culture. I don't like to say white people as a whole because, well, not all white people are guilty. Now, some white people are guilty by association because they won't do the things that they know they should do and sidestep all of that privilege and just accept the privilege of being a human being so that other people can have that same privilege. But, and yes, I said privilege with quotations around it, just so y'all is clear. But, you know, the thing that bugs me is how there is this idea, and anything anybody does which in any way threatens this idea and this ideal status has to be dragged down too. So you got this black woman talking about, oh, yes, there were lots of other countries and continents besides Europe coming over to Africa and capturing Africans and making money off of them. And it's like, historically, can you point those out to me, please? You know, to this day, 2022, we're still talking about the British Commonwealth as if these people did not have sovereignty. You know, and this idea of this supreme white culture has permeated every aspect of our lives because of the colonization of the mind.
Yes.
So here we are, we're talking about things that are not only literary devices or literary aspects of the human experience, they are made up.
Hey, I like that phrase you used, and if you could repeat it, colonization of the mind.
Yes, colonization of the mind. That's what we're talking about. You have people literally threatening folks with death. Okay, this is not hyperbole, and I'm sorry to start Monday out this way, but I figure if we stretch it out and look at it, and then we snap back so you can do the work, you know, we'll be able to be on the same page and have the idea of what the work is. And maybe by next week have maybe made some progress, who knows. But the colonization of the mind in this respect is in regard to the fact that you can't even make up a story and be gracious enough to accept that that story has roots, a universal root. No, you want it to just be about you and your vision, your idea, your ideal situation. And so case in point, we have actors being threatened over portraying mermaids, elves, super spies, heroes, as if those are only the domain of a supremacist attitude, white attitude. It's like, no, they're not. And it's, you know, just to break it on down a little bit more, here it is. We're still arguing over whether James Bond can be a black man or not. Idris Elba would be a perfect emblem for the James Bond icon. Yes, he would. And he's British.
Well, yeah. Wow. And he'll serve for, well, I guess now His Majesty's service, Secret Service.
Well, you know, I don't know if they want to change that because, you know, that might not be canon. Because in all of Ian Fleming's time, not all of it, I take that back. He served on the throne for 50 years. But in all of Ian Fleming's time, I think there might have been right before her. But yeah, you got it. Okay. But I mean, here's the thing. One of the most recent issues was the fact that somebody had a hissy fit because there was going to be a black Little Mermaid. Okay, now the last time I checked, mermaids were a fixture in lots of different cultures. I don't think they just existed in a Nordic culture. So you upset because a little black girl is going to be able to hear, I want to live under the sea and be happy. It fascinates me, you know. And those are two of the aspects of this madness, you know, where people are losing their mind. Now, I'm not. Go ahead.
I was going to suggest because I think there are several things that happens over this particular issue in terms of the Little Mermaid, because it's not only the portrayal of this character is part of a, for lack of a better term, an assault on, as you suggested, a creation of an image of what the world ought to be. And we have to go back to look at, in fact, the creation of the Disney world, the Disney empire, how it portrayed the imagined world for decades. So we can look at the films, the characters, and what you saw, talking about the relation, how to relate to what we were talking about earlier about the British Empire, was the characterization of a white supremacist culture and world, and a sense of what characters would lift it up. And so this assault, and you know, it's certainly on this movie that has not yet been released, The Little Mermaid, but it's also in terms of how people are responding angrily to the shift in the portrayal of an imagined world. So Disney, which, you know, for generation was a symbol of white supremacist culture, is suddenly shifting. And you have people, culture, in the culture, upset and angry because it's no longer the way it has been or supposed to be. You asked me a question a few weeks ago. I'm not sure whether or not we talked about it on the program. And you recall the question about what you said about, well, do they want people of color in the future? And the question is, no, they don't.
Well, apparently not the past either.
As the past.
You know, I cannot give Disney credit for all of this, you know, racist nonsense, because Hans Christian Andersen wrote The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was back in the 1800s or something. I remember reading that story when I was a kid. Okay. So I understand how people might want to be upset, you know, that their quote-unquote history or their ideas or their culture is being usurped. Well, you know, you didn't say that when Disney rewrote Little Mermaid according to what he thought the story should be. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody said that. There wasn't an outcry. There wasn't an outcry until Disney started usurping perspectives from people of color, from cultures and stories of people of color, you know, and plus some of the racist tropes you would find in Disney movies, which I know because I watched them because that's all there was to watch back in the day.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's not just that. And I understand sometimes you want your culture represented correctly, okay? I can appreciate that. But here's the thing. Nobody really wants to have a good conversation about this, but you and I did I think it was last year, when we talked about science fiction and the fact that a young African woman had won an award for great science fiction. She was African. She won the H.P. Lovecraft Award. H.P. Lovecraft was a blatant racist, okay? The man was a racist. And I read his stories, so I am not talking about somebody with secondhand or thirdhand knowledge. I grew up reading H.P. Lovecraft stories, okay? Now, what I didn't know, however, and I was both thankful that I didn't know and slightly sad that I didn't know, was the fact that he had written a poem thought on the creation of niggers. I lost my mind. I learned that from watching Lovecraft Country with Misha Green and Jordan Peele's interpretation of the Matt Ruff book. You know, I'm thinking to myself, how many more of my favorite authors were racist, okay, who had something really just ignoble to say about people of color? I mean, Rudyard Kipling with the poem If, you know, somebody quoted that on Facebook a little while ago, and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to bite this one because I memorized that poem. I still live by elements from that poem. Yeah, man's a blatant racist, you know? So when you want to say, well, that's not how they wrote the story, you got to think about, well, why did they write the story this way? Now, fast forward to 2022, and here we have two opposing camps of literature. Well, not opposing, but two different camps of literature, but suffering from the same malady. Okay, so they want to have the Rings of Power. Okay, but they don't want any black elves. Okay, but then they want to say, but Tolkien didn't write it that way. Okay, then they want to turn around and say, but Tolkien wasn't racist because he didn't want to let the Nazis use his stuff. It's like you can't have it both ways. You can't. So the thing is, white supremacist culture, stop tripping, because we're not going to stop. The future contains all of the human family, all of the human family. And white supremacist culture has been big on co-opting other people's stories. How many of us old heads out there used to love to watch them some Charlie Chan? You know, Charlie Chan was a caricature of a Chinese man. And sometimes he wasn't even Chinese. And sometimes the sons that portrayed, I mean, the actors that portrayed his sons in the TV show and the movies, they weren't Chinese either. Some of them were Japanese. And so you're looking at that and you're saying, oh, y'all can do it, but you get mad if somebody else do it. Oh, so, you know, that's when I look at this and say, this is madness, people. And so I have homework for folks. I think you need to not only take a deep breath, you know, and step out there, but I would challenge you to challenge your white counterparts, your white colleagues, your white family, your white friends and neighbors to broaden in their perspective and have a discussion about this idea that anything that white people do should be kept pure, but it's all right for white people to take other people's cultures and change it the way you want. I would challenge you to have a conversation and see if you all can broaden your perspective and come to some type of conclusion that all of this noise about keeping it pure white is nonsense, you know. But that's the topic we want to explore today. Let me give the phone number. The phone number is 503-231-8187.
And what is the question you would, specific question you would like the callers to respond to, Celeste?
Well, you know, I know we're going to get a lot of people who are going to say, oh, yes, Cecil and Celeste, you're absolutely right. People should stop doing it. But I really want to dig a little deeper. And I want people to look at what their deeply held and most revered and cherished and treasured, you know, stories, fables, you know, myths, whatever, are, and imagine how that can be broadened and not be black, or I mean, not be exclusively white, and just be honest. You know, if one of those things bothers you, tell us why it bothers you. If it doesn't bother you, you know, share some ideas you have for expanding it. But most importantly, I want to get your reactions. You know, can you be aware enough to recognize that this is a human story? You know, this is something that happens to the family of man. And then also, I don't know, Cecil, what would you like people to say about it?
Well, I would like people, as you suggested, imagine how you might offer different ways of portraying popular characters. So we mentioned in terms of Ian Fleming and the author of James Bond, but the movies, and there have been numerous characters who have played James Bond over the years. So perhaps think of a character in a movie and think of if you were the casting director and you wanted to make things just a little bit different, how would you or who would you cast in that role? So, for example, James Bond, Her Majesty's Secret Service. What if James Bond was a non-binary person of color? Who might that be?
Grace Jones. No, I'm just joking.
Grace Jones. Wasn't Grace Jones in a James Bond movie?
Yes, she was definitely a Bond girl. What's on entertainment? I did a segment on Bond girls and music, and Grace was one of the Bond girls, and she was an exception in that not only was she a musical performer, you know, she did not sing a song, but she acted in the role.
Okay.
You know, but you know, I just said that to be funny. Campy for me. I want my Bond serious. My Bond shaken, not stirred.
Okay, but suppose a James Bond girl was a man. I mean, let's just be expansive. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and let's go to our caller, Robbie. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Oh, I've been good. I'm very good. I like the conversation, and so actually, Well, I did want to say with the bringing up of the Queen and the royal family, I did want to say I like this joke, but if there was ever an example of a welfare queen, she's dead now. Well,
yes. Yes.
Sorry. Anyway, I like to bring up. But I will say, okay, the Little Mermaid thing, a lot of people are talking about it. I totally think I agree with what you want to say, but I want to throw, you know, just a part up there so you can dig into it a bit more. I think the only reason why I'm not completely happy with the Little Mermaid movie is because they're just rebooting another older movie. You know, it's like the 10th Terminator, they can't create anything original anymore. So that's why I'm a little bit like, I'm like, oh, another mermaid movie. They can't create something original and new and fresh. They have to recycle these old ideas. But that aside, you know, I do think it's interesting watching. We'd had a conversation before years ago about how they were trying to include more diversity in commercials and TV commercials. It came out during the Obama administration that the Actors Guild wasn't fairly representative. And so they started putting more, you know, diversity into these commercials. And the problem was is that you watch these commercials and it's like, you know, debt forgiveness or, you know, all these and it just portrays it in such a poor light, in my opinion. But watching them do it now, it's hard for me to think that they're actually doing it genuinely or, you know, I don't think that they're doing this because they actually care. I think it's just the time. Yes. And the biggest thing that I see happening, and here's my hot take, I see diversity coming out of the left side. I've been in this fight all my life. I've been trying to be an activist. And now with this younger generation, it's harder for me to see the same things. And they're very passionate. They're very active. And I definitely think that's helpful. But I think it's a lot of misguidedness. And here's the hot take. The idea where black people and brown people can't be racist, I understand the notion that systemic racism allows people to not actually partake in that systemic racism, right? I understand that part. But then I get confused because then there'll be racist attacks on other communities. And, you know, for instance, there was a lot of Asian attacks, racist attacks on Asian communities during the past 2 years. And I'm sitting here and there's people who weren't necessarily white who did that. And I'm like sitting here and I'm like, okay, so is that still considered a racist attack?
So
or are we just going to have a semantics debate?
Yeah, let me respond. Let me respond at least, because I think it's more than a semantic debate. I think it is a semantic debate in terms of describing these phenomena. So I think it's an important discussion, and I think we have a way of throwing around terms casually in which they do not have the same meaning for everyone. So I think it's an important discussion, just generally. What do we mean when we say certain words? So it's an important discussion. Now, it's a bit beyond the scope of this conversation this morning, but I think it's relevant. Celeste, I'll let you respond.
Well, you know, what I wanted to say is that here's the thing. Racism and bigotry, or rather racism and prejudice are similar, but they're not the same thing. Racism conveys a certain amount of power, and bigotry and prejudice speaks to personal attitudes, and I'll just say it, you know, ignorance, but it doesn't necessarily have power as part of that dynamic. Now, the reason I say that is because I think people of color can be horrible bigots. I have met many in my life. I've met black people who were bigots. I've met Native American and other indigenous people from other countries that are bigots. I have met Asian bigots. I mean, we talked about the animosity between the Black American and the Asian American community with regard to the anti-Asian attacks. So we know that there are idiots out there in the human family, you know. But I think when we want to say that people of color can't be racist, what we need to remember is we're talking about the power that comes with that ignorance, the power that is imbued in racism, because racism is an institutional dynamic. I won't hesitate to say that. And I don't think that's semantics. That's getting down to the salient differences, you know, the pivot points.
Okay, let me, and I agree with everything you say, and I totally recognize the differences, and I can see that. But I mean, so it's like we're going to call them bigoted attacks on the Asian community when it's not white people, right? Let me throw out this confusing thing, because I've had this discussion before with people who say that it's like, what about if we go to Mexico and you watch the Mexicans there who are racist against the Guatemalans? Is that also just bigotry? Because what you have there is a systemic structure that supports the Mexicans and not the Guatemalans. So would that be racist?
Well, let me have you answer your own question. Who has the power?
The Mexicans.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so I do think that this is a semantics debate, but I don't think that trying to change the words of, you know, racist to bigoted is actually going to fix any racism. I think it just kind of makes excuses in the sense that it's not really holding people accountable for, you know, judgmental or bigoted words that they may say. And it just seems kind of making divisions.
Okay, but wait a minute. Why can't it? Because words have power. And by calling these things out precisely, you don't allow wiggle room. I don't see how it doesn't, because that's the tactics I use when I'm talking to somebody in my community. Let me finish. And when I'm calling out people in my own community because they're being bigots, I will say, how is this any different from you? The way you get treated, you know, you may not have any power, because some folks will say, well, I don't have any power to be a racist. I say, yeah, but you have the power to be a bigot, and you're being that right now. And that is the same dynamic, just you don't have as much power. I said, but you do have the power to hurt somebody, and you're doing it. If you call people out very precisely about what they're doing, they're going to hear you. They may not want to accept what you say, but I mean, that's no reason to back away from using this particular tactic just because you feel like it's semantics. I I'm not going to pretend I've always been successful when I point it out, but I mean, there's no reason not to use it. And it's not lazy. It's being quite precise, and that takes work. Precision takes work.
I would definitely agree. I think that calling it out accurately is good, and we are able to have those conversations here. A lot of times what I've seen out with activist groups, particularly, is the ability not to have that time to explain and talk things out. And what I saw actually multiple times, I would say most recently, was an Asian individual who was trying to explain her experience, and when they were all together and she said she said that very notion that I'm not going to say it, you know, but you know, she could have rephrased it that the Asian attacks were perpetrated against a bigot, but she said that the opposite thing, the thing that I'm bringing up, and then everybody kind of booed her and they were booing this Asian who had been attacked, and it's just like I have a hard time seeing that. I think I've said this, which is, you know, watching justice being replaced by revenge, and those words, it's easy to get carried away, and I just, you know, and so I don't think it's lazy to, you know, try to want to call it out. I just think that I don't think that it's that, you know what I mean? Like I think it's kind of making it's not a holding, you know, if it were like, oh, well, they can't be racist, then what does that mean for the person who felt like they were racistly attacked?
Well, you know, if we had more time, I would discuss that. Maybe that's something we'll take as a next step, because that does need a discussion. But, you know, I don't care whether I've been racially attacked or semantically attacked. If I was attacked, I was attacked, and I'm going to deal with the gist of that. But But we do have the callers lined up, and so I'm going to have to bid you adieu. You're listening to More Talk Radio. Oops, sorry for the noise. You're listening for More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. I am here with my cohort, Cecil. This is Celeste, and you are on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the Portland metro area, 91.9 in Point East, and in the south along the Willamette River Valley, 104.3. Who is up next?
Tawasi is next.
Good morning, Tawasi.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your wonderful work, and to everyone at the studio and just all KBOO supporters, I appreciate you. Please, please do support community radio if you haven't already. You know, what you guys are talking about is really important, where characters uphold narratives in popular media. So, you know, for me, a recent character was the woman warrior in Prey, who supplanted the, you know, the Aryan, what, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know? She displaced a military figure, a white militant, with an indigenous, you know, tribal person. And I loved it. I just loved every minute of it. So, you know, for me, I'm tired of seeing these guys, these white guys, being propped up because their grandfathers own the studio or some baloney like that. You know, whoever it is that, like you were saying, has the power to put in place these media heads tells us what's good and they tell us what's bad. And, you know, for people like me, a Native American person, we don't have representation. The representation we get is this horrific, vile, like, savages, you know, cowboys and Indians shoot the Indians, you know, and that's what I grew up with. You know, do you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an Indian chief? Well, can an Indian chief be a doctor or a lawyer? How come I have to be an Indian chief and I can't be a doctor or a lawyer? So
can an Indian chief be a doctor and a lawyer and a scientist or whatever else too? And why does it have to be a chief?
Where are the pictures of, where are the pictures and movies of the indigenous people who designed and created the first IV? You know, where are the movies depicting the scientists who were able to, you know, create these things that indigenous people made? Instead, they focus in on this very narrow spectrum of white privilege, and it's just disgusting because it doesn't, to me, it doesn't represent me at all. Instead, it represents the people who actively murder people like me. It's not in the past. It's now. Anyway, I'll listen for a minute.
Now, hold on a second, because I think you touched upon an issue you said in passing, but I think it's really important in terms of who decides who these characters ought to be. And you mentioned, you know, that such and such is there because their grandfather owned the studio. So it's a, I think it's a question of power and control, and who controls the narratives of those who have the power. So how do we resist or overcome those powerful forces which prevent Native indigenous people from being portrayed either accurately or in different ways?
Well, you know, the gatekeepers in our society are horrible. Like Harvey Weinstein was one of the gatekeepers in movies, yes. And he's victimizing women. You know, the gatekeepers in music entertainment let R. Kelly in and continue to. You know, like the gatekeepers at the Royal Palace let Jeffrey Epstein in. So, you know, while a certain demographic wants to portray themselves as being upright citizens who deserve the moral high ground, their behaviors show that they carry out genocide, they kill the Indian and save the man. And even now, my sister, she's 10 times more likely to be murdered because she's Native American. And a lot of that's because media portrays indigenous women and sexualizes them and puts them in some sort of a fetishized sexual thing, you know? And it is directly reflected in murder and rape numbers in our community. So, you know, the media is really important, and what it tells us is totally disgusting, and I can't feel good about it. You know, I've been trying to feel good about reservation dogs because it's real, but it's the same thing happening. If you are like me and you're part of the Native American community, you look at the people in that video, in those movies, and say, hey, that guy only has representation because his grandfather... Dallas Goldtooth, his grandfather or his father is this other guy that they, you know, I hate to say it, but they're like the treaty signers or the other derogatory words that we have in our community. Yes. Those guys are them. They are them. They represent bigot. They represent, money takers. And it's hard because we want to feel good about seeing ourselves on film and video, but the only people the gatekeepers let in are the horrible people. Sadly, KBOO, it's the same for you. Because we, as indigenous people, know Jacqueline Keeler is not part of our beneficial side. And her representation in your media hurts me personally. And it hurts a lot of people like me. And I've said it over and again, and I don't know where to go with that. That's a whole other aside. But thank you for representing minorities in media and just everything. Again, I appreciate you guys so much.
Well, thank you so much
thank
for
you so
taking
much
the time
to watch it. Yes,
and
there's so much more to be unpacked in these conversations and Tawasi, as well as Robbie. They have set prominently before us some of the challenges that are in our conversations that we have to address, this is not going to be a one and done, because the damage has been done for centuries, and it's pervasive. It's everywhere in our culture.
And we will go to our next caller, Mark. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for a great discussion. I'd like to just make a few comments, and I'm looking forward to your replies. I just translated an article from German titled, Nobody Knows That China Landed on the Moon. And in the article you read that China landed on the moon in 2020 and planted its flag, but we're so committed to the information war against China, to negativity, that we just refuse to report. That's point number one. Now, point number two, Hans Christian Andersen also wrote an incredible story, The Emperor Has No Clothes. And I've been fascinated by this story. It really seems to help explain Trump and the disasters in our culture, the blindness of the rich. One interpretation of this story is that the people refuse to admit the failure of a person, the failure of a system. There are many interpretations which are important, and of course we eulogize our leaders. We hardly investigate their backgrounds. Then the third point is an incredible remark in Matthew 11:18, when Jesus says, "How should we describe people of the world?" And he said, "They're like people who say we piped and you did not dance." That shows the vanity, the absurdity of worldly life. And I think with I think we really need a spirit-filled existence. We need to learn from the New Testament, so we can have a dual citizenship, so we can have a citizenship with God and a citizenship in the world. What do you think of those three comments?
Well, those
they're powerful.
those are unique comments. So not much to say in response, but thank you for calling.
Very good. Thank you.
And you are listening to KBOO FM, More Talk Radio, and we will speak with Joel. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. I came on just 15 minutes ago, but I thought I had a pertinent comment. I would love people's thoughts on it, your thoughts on it. I feel like you're talking about power. I don't know what the original question was for today, but I had a notion that I just would have thought that you should put it in the world and see what people think, and it's not original. I don't think it's original, but it seems to me is sometimes individuals or entities come into more power. Maybe they didn't used to have it. And it seems to me an eternal imperative to continue to share your power, this responsibility that to spread it out. This responsibility that comes with power, it seems just to me obvious. And I do see, I don't want to give the examples I have, I don't want to, but you know, entities even, you know, can come into power and then forget, sometimes forget that enough decades go by, centuries go by, they can become the marginalizer, they can become the, so I guess this, I'm not about in any way an individual responsibility in a way. I think to solve problems in sort of hearkening individual responsibility is actually not the way I think the world should go about it. But another side of me says, I try to point it to myself, to others. Do you have power, even over a classroom, a school, a family, et cetera, so to speak, or on a bigger level? And do you share your power? What do you do with it? I think it's a little bit not talked about. I think, you know, elected officials, you know, you have some power. You know, even having a radio show is, so even an individual, YouTube channel's power. And I find it lost on people sometimes to really look at oneself. And I'll say the final statement I'll say is, I think if one is going to call themselves decent, I think it's no crazy thing to say, do you share power? Are you a multimillionaire, a billionaire? I mean, that's an easy target. And, you know, you think you're decent? Well, I charge you, if you still have that in the bank, that kind of money, I don't think you can have this cake and eat it too. I would say, what are you doing with your power? Wealth is power. Anyway, I know I rambled there a bit.
Well, let me respond, because I think you raise a very important point in terms of this discussion about power. Because first, I agree with most of what you said. I think that most people, they begin with is that I'm a decent, we are decent, we are on the right side. And I think one thing that happens when people gain access to power, that they continue to believe that they are decent, that they are doing the right thing. And as you suggest, we do not realize the power that we have, and that even though we think we are doing the right thing, that we need to not only be questioned, but also to ask, as you suggest, what are we doing with the power we have? So, it's not necessarily frightening, but it's a moment to pause and saying, okay, maybe I do have power. Maybe I need to give up power. And even though I'm, you know, think of the cause, whatever, it might be saving cats. You know, I've been doing this for years and years, and maybe someone else who has different ways of doing things, but because I have this power, I'm limiting the possibility. And, you know, to give up power is something that I think we admire. Regardless of what we think about the U.S. history. I think the fact that George Washington made the decision when he could have been crowned emperor, he said that I will not serve a third term, and set a precedent for U.S. U.S. executives. I think power, the true power of those who are powerful, of those who are able to give up power, as you suggest.
Oh, I fully agree. Yeah. Well, that was my comment. I guess I sometimes, who isn't? I'm a little bit sometimes extra bothered by hypocrisy. I think it's a bit a human thing. So I'll just be quick here. When I see sometimes people give sort of hopes and prayers, so to speak, or you know, let's just—I don't be too specific here—but maybe famous people, athletes, musicians, famous people will—they have some—they have power in a way. They have influence, money.
Yes.
They won't really give. Sometimes they do, but sometimes there will be no money, and it's just I'm with you. You know, they're talking to a marginalized entity or this or that or people. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Well, you're not doing anything. You're not. It is, and I find it so. In a way, it just kills me for this hypocrisy. You have some power. Share it anyway. I'll let it be there.
It is. It's not only athletes and movie stars. You know, I really hate when I hear legislators, those in government with power, senators, representatives. You know, tweeting prayers and condolences. I mean.
That is the worst. It is. Yeah, you have real power. You get airtime and here. Well, I got to go. I really appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. And, you know, this is a subject which we will broach again because, well, it's still enduring. Sad to say, and we're talking about the bigoted and racist responses to a multicultural, a multi-hued presentation of fairy tales, of science fiction, of other literary and cinematic works. And just how unrealistic and how ignorant and how painful that is to the human body in toto, you know, to all of us. And there are a lot of people, I'm sure, who would think, well, it's not a damage to me because, you know, it's supposed to be white. And my question is it really? I mean, y'all act like, if you believe that, you act like you're the only culture that ever thought that water was wet. No. And you can look up, you can just go do a search, pick any search engine of your choice, and look up mermaid fables and myths from around the world. And you will find mermaid tales from China to the Caribbean, you know, all around the world. African too, oh yes, by the way. You know, and it's fascinating that even new things must be done a certain way because people lost their mind when in Star Wars there were black characters. John Boyega, I mean, my gosh, how many threats did he get? But then they wanna idolize Billy Dee Williams. You know, that he was Kando. Lando Calrissian. There my dyslexia goes. He was cool. Yeah, okay. That's only because you're still being chauvinistic in a respect, and that is you're just thinking about, you know, the coolness of the black man rather than the black actor's portrayal of a black possibility in the future. Anyway, we need to get past this nonsense, and I want to challenge the listeners to have these conversations with their cohorts and see what kind of see what happens.
Well, let's see what our next caller has to say. I'm still looking for who should be the next non-binary James Bond. But let's go to Francis. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. Well, I like Roger Moore, James Bond.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe Billy Dee to blame too. But anyway,
Roger Moore, Francis, that's an abomination. Roger Moore, he's funny, but James Bond, he ain't. But no, I feel you.
I hear you. But what this whole mermaid thing is just kind of, it's just kind of insane to me. I wish somebody would do a movie about the Selkies in Ireland, and the legend is that they came from seals, and they were...
Oh, there is. There's two movies. One of them is not directly. It's called Ondine, O-N-D-I-N-E, and the other is The Secret of Roan Inish. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't, but...
I think it was
told to me, they were women and men.
Right.
Who came from seals, and they were dark-skinned, beautiful people. So, you know, they loved the ocean, too. So, whatever. I just think the whole thing is ridiculous. That it is even a concern is ridiculous, but...
Yes, I feel you.
All right. Okay, well, you guys take care.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, you know...
Go ahead.
No, I was trying to see what Ray was saying, but no, he wasn't. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Continue, Celeste.
Oh, I was just going to say, and for those who were surprised that I came up with the answer to that about the Silky so quick, you know, my paternal grandfather was Irish, and I mean, like, fresh off the boat, you know, and then the rest of my family is Native American, and then Black. And so I learned all of my family's culture. But here's the thing. If you want to do some searches, there are thoughts that some of the stories, now people will say, no, that's not true. But, you know, hey, there are a lot of Spaniards who will have a hissy fit if you say, well, you know, you were dominated by the Moors for 8 centuries. You know, that means that there is both sub-Saharan and Saharan African genes floating around in there. There are folks who thought that part of this whole Black Irish thing might be the influence of Africans in Ireland. And I've heard a lot of the different stories, so that's why I hit it so fast. Yeah. But here's the other thing. What do we gain by ignoring the fact that we are all the family of man? We lose a whole lot more than we gain.
The family of humanity.
Anyway,
no, I'll just say the family of humanity.
Yes, indeed.
What was I saying? I don't know. Probably not very, very much. I'm still trying to figure out Grace Jones, James Bond, but I don't know. I don't know.
I like the idea of non-binary. It would be an interesting person, and I can't think of any actors who I would like to see play it, but I can think of just, you know, and then when I say I can't think of anybody I'd like to see play it, meaning a non-binary, I don't know anybody off the top of my head who would fill my full idea. Now, there is a non-binary player, actor in one of my favorite shows, The Umbrella Academy, you know.
But and I want to pause because I think, to go back to how we began this issue, it's great to have these characters to offer different perspectives. But whether or not, you know, not to get too political, they are just face covering that continue to hold up an oppressive system.
Yes.
I don't know.
And seeing that's the other part of it. You know, we don't even have enough time to get to that. Why do we want a part in that whole oppressive dynamic? So I don't want to play the role of a despot in a movie, because then my face is out there. Because if it's not really doing anything to help humanity as a whole, why am I choosing this character to play? If I'm going to play somebody, let me play somebody who inspires people to do better. But that's just me, you know. And I ain't the end-all, be-all.
Well, Listeners, thank you so much for being a part of our conversation this morning as we continue to strive and try to uncover ways in which we are all human, most of us, some of the time. We also recognize that although we share some things that are funny or humorous, that we continue to live in a world that is filled with danger and terror and war, and people are suffering. So we remember all the things we need to do to transform our world, and so that we will be able to go and watch The Little Mermaid and be happy. You want to sing you want to sing the Little Mermaid song, Celeste?
Oh no, I remember raising 2 years old, who at the time had discovered that, and that was all you heard. That I want to live under the sea. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Please support your community connection, KBOO Portland. We appreciate your financial support, but it's not just that. Tell people to listen and serve on our various committees. Committees as they reach out to other communities. This is your chance to make radio that is about you, for you, for everyone else as well. Thanks to our engineer, Ray. Yay. Thank you, Cecil.
Have a good day.
We'll hear you next week. Stay tuned to the Old Mo Variety Hour coming up next.